Unit 21C, Ethical and Socio-Cultural Issues in Physical Activity and Sport, Unit Details. Within this unit, you need to know the following. Firstly, you need to understand what is meant by the term sportsmanship and give examples of where this can be seen in sport. Next, you need to know the definitions of gamesmanship and deviance, the reasons why sports performers may choose to behave this way, and again, you need to be able to give examples of when these can be seen in sport. You also need to understand the reasons why a sports performer may become violent. Finally, you need to know about the three types of performance-enhancing drugs a sports person may use. These are called anabolic steroids, beta blockers and stimulants, and you need to know that their effects on performance and side effects, along with appropriate examples of who would use them. In addition to this, you need to know the reasons why a sports performer may choose to take performance-enhancing drugs and the impact of this drug use on the performers and the sport itself. Unit 2.1C, Ethical and Social Cultural Issues in Physical Activity and Sport, recording number 1. In this recording, I will discuss sportsmanship. Sportsmanship is about how a participant behaves. The exam board OCR say that sportsmanship is ethical, appropriate, polite and fair behaviour while participating in a game or an athletic event, also known as fair play. This is a key definition which they may ask you for in the exam, so you need to know it. Demonstrating sportsmanship involves showing respect for others and being gracious in victory or defeat. Sportsmanship is important as not only is it the right thing to do in sport, but it can also carry over into other aspects of life. It is important that professionals show good sportsmanship, as young athletes see them as role models and can repeat their behaviour, so therefore it's important that they behave well on the field. Sporting examples of sportsmanship that transfer across all sports include shaking hands before or after an event, following the rules of the sport, and accepting the official's decision without complaint. Specific examples include helping an opponent to their feet after a challenge in football, applauding the new batsman as they take the field in cricket, and allowing an opponent to steady themselves after several heavy shots in boxing. It is important that when you are asked to give a practical example, that you specify which sport you are referring to in order to gain the AO2 mark. For example, if you were to say shaking hands after a game, you would not receive the mark. But saying shaking hands after a game of rugby would make sure that you did get the mark, so ensure that you always name a sport, as you should across all other aspects of the course as well. Unit 2.1C, Ethical and Socio-Cultural Issues in Physical Activity and Sport, recording number 2. In this recording, I will discuss gamesmanship and deviance. Gamesmanship is defined by the exam board OCR as where the laws of the game are interpreted in ways which, whilst not illegal, are not within the spirit of the game, also known as pushing the limits to gain an advantage. I like to think of this as when a performer bends the rules. They don't actually break any rules, but they put sportsmanship aside and use gamesmanship to gain an advantage. You will often see examples of gamesmanship in football. For example, if a team is winning and perhaps only has a narrow lead, a player may go down pretending to be injured in the last few minutes. Once the ball is out of play, this pauses the game and will waste time. This means that the player's team have a greater chance of winning, as there is less time for the opponent to score an equaliser. Another example from football would be when a player takes a long time to leave the field when they have been substituted. They will waste time and also halt the opponent's momentum if they are pressing for an equaliser, and this is often why you will see a winning team make substitutions late into stoppage time. Another example of gamesmanship in any sport involving a ball would be delaying a restart. For example, following a goal in netball, a player may throw the ball past the centre intentionally. This will delay the team from being able to get a quick restart and will also allow all of their team to get back on side. This may also be done in football, where a player may boot the ball high into the stands so that it takes a long time to get back pitch side. Again, this will waste time when a team is in a winning position. Deviance is going a step further than this in order to win. The OCR definition of deviance is behaviour that is either immoral or seriously breaks the rules and norms of the sport. This is where a player, a spectator, or anyone involved in the sport behaves in a way that breaks the rules. Deviance is deliberate cheating and it can also be dangerous. Examples of deviance include an outfield player deliberately handling the ball to prevent a goal in football, a weightlifter taking performance-enhancing drugs in order to improve their muscular strength so that they can lift heavier weights, a rugby player deliberately tackling high or late, or a cricketer deliberately bowling wide to draw the match after receiving a payment for match fixing. The reasons why an athlete may become deviant include wanting to win, so they are willing to take the risk, wanting to earn more money, having low morals and not seeing cheating as wrong, or the punishments from governing bodies not being enough of a deterrent to put them off. Unit 2.1c, Ethical and Socio-Cultural Issues in Physical Activity and Sport, recording number 3. In this recording, I will discuss violence in sport and the reasons why a sports person may become violent. Controlled aggression is a key part of many sports. However, sometimes this can spill over into an uncontrolled situation where serious harm can be caused. Violence is defined by OCR as physical acts committed in sport that go beyond the accepted rules of play or the expected levels of contact within a contact sport. Violence is deemed to be behaviour that, if it occurred on the streets rather than in a sporting situation, it would be considered a crime. You need to be familiar with why a sports person may become violent. Firstly, the importance of the result may cause them to become violent. For example, winning or losing money, a competition, or their league position may make them feel that they are under additional pressure to win. Team rivalries may also cause them to act this way. The nature of the sport could lead to violence. For example, violence is much more likely in an ice hockey game in comparison to bowls due to the nature of the contact sport and the fact that they actually have a dedicated fighter on the ice rink known as the enforcer. Another reason why a performer may become violent is in retaliation due to being provoked. This could be in the form of abuse from the crowd or sledging from the opposition. The crowd's behaviour can also heighten the situation, making the atmosphere hostile. Another reason would be if a performer was disappointed at their own performance or a referee's decision. This frustration could lead to them lashing out. The media hype of an event on hyping up of the performer can also cause them to become violent if something does not go their way. A final potential reason for violence could be if a performer was taking performance-enhancing drugs. Some drugs, such as anabolic steroids, have side effects such as increased aggression. I will now give 3 real-life examples of violence in sport and discuss how the factors I have just mentioned have led to these violent outbursts. Videos of all of these can be found on YouTube if you wish to see them for yourself. One example of violence in sport would be from rugby league. In 2014, Wigan faced St Helens in the grand final at Old Trafford. In the opening minutes, Wigan prop Ben Flower had a fantastic chance to score the opening try, but he spilled a pass just a few metres short of the try line, which wasted the opportunity to score. He was clipped by St Helens player Lance O'Hara, who had been running in to make the challenge before Flower dropped the ball. Flower reacted savagely in frustration. He punched O'Hara, knocking him to the ground, which is bad enough, but he didn't stop there. He kneeled over and punched him again. He was already unconscious when he did so. The millions of viewers watching were disgusted, with TV replays showing the brutality of the attack. Flower was sent off and banned for 6 months. However, this was an example of violence, and if Flower's acts had taken place on the street rather than the field, then he could have been looking at prison time for assault. Flower has since claimed that he acted this way in frustration at his own performance, as he had just wasted a try-scoring opportunity. We could also suggest that the importance of the result and the media hype was affecting him, as it was the grand final, the biggest game of the Super League season. A final reason we could allude to is due to the nature of the game. Contact is allowed in rugby, perhaps making this seem more acceptable. However, we know that it certainly is not. Another famous example is from boxing. In 1997, Mike Tyson and Evander Holyfield were watched by millions as they took to the ring for a rematch following on from a feisty encounter 7 months earlier. As defending champion, Tyson was the hot favourite for the bout. However, Holyfield flew out the traps and left him on the back foot. In the second round, Holyfield ducked under a jab from Tyson, and in doing so, he headbutted his opponent. This opened a cut over Tyson's eye. Tyson had complained about headbutting in the first fight between the two, but it was proven to be unintentional. Tyson began round three with a ferocious attack, and during a clinch between the two, he spat out his mouthguard and bit Holyfield on his ear. He bit off a 1-inch piece of cartilage from his ear and spat it to the ground. The wound was bleeding rapidly. A timeout was called, but incredibly, after a few minutes, the doctor declared Holyfield okay to carry on. The fight continued, but not much later, Tyson bit Holyfield's other ear, not doing as much damage this time. They continued fighting until the end of the round, when the fight was stopped after the referee had discovered that there had been a second bite. Tyson had his boxing license taken away from him, and he was ordered to pay a $3 million fine. However, less than a year later, Tyson got his boxing license restored and went on to fight again for several years. Tyson has claimed that the reason he was violent in this was in retaliation to Evander Holyfield's perceived headbutts. However, we can also suggest that the media hype of the event, the nature of the contact sport, the importance of the result in terms of his title, and frustration at his own performance in the early rounds would have been at play in causing him to become violent here. A final example would be from when Manchester United travelled to Anfield to face Liverpool in 2015. Both sides were battling it out for the fourth spot in the league and an all-important Champions League place. At half-time, Man United were leading 1-0 with Gerrard, who had announced that he would be leaving his boyhood club at the end of the season, being brought on as a substitute, in what he knew would be his last ever game against hated rivals United. Gerrard got stuck in straight away with a heavy challenge on Juan Mata. The Liverpool fans roared at this display of desire. Moments later, Ander Herrera came flying in on Gerrard with a low tackle, which left him on the ground. It was at this point that Gerrard stamped on his leg. Referee Martin Atkinson spotted the challenge straight away and sent Steven Gerrard off with only 38 seconds having passed since he came on. Gerrard claimed that the reason for this was in retaliation to Herrera's challenge. Other reasons that we can suggest here are team rivalry and Gerrard wanting to leave a stamp, literally, on the final game against a team that he despised. In this instance, the crowd were also influencing him as their reaction to the first overzealous challenge was encouraging, and this would have psyched him up. Unit 2.1c, Ethical and Socio-Cultural Issues in Physical Activity and Sport, recording number 4. In this recording, I will discuss our first performance-enhancing drug, anabolic steroids. Anabolic steroids are a man-made form of the male hormone testosterone. They are illegal Class C drugs which are usually injected into the muscle or taken as tablets. The three effects of this drug on performance are that they increase muscle growth and strength, help muscles to repair quickly after training, and then allow athletes to train harder for longer without getting tired. A performer who requires high levels of strength, such as a weightlifter or a sprinter, may take anabolic steroids, as they help the athlete to make rapid increases in strength by developing muscle mass. They also help with the recovery and repair of muscles after high-intensity movements, such as the sprint or a clean and jerk. This will allow a performer to train harder and more often without becoming tired, and this will inevitably lead to increased performance due to the additional training. Several Olympic sprinters have been caught using this drug over the years due to their ability to increase strength, which will allow them to push out the blocks with more force and power themselves down the track faster than without the use of these drugs. The three side effects of this drug include increased aggression and mood swings, increased chance of heart disease, and developing characteristics belonging to the opposite gender, such as breasts or facial hair. Unit 2.1c, Ethical and Socio-Cultural Issues in Physical Activity and Sport, recording number 5. In this recording, I will discuss our next performance-enhancing drug, beta blockers. Beta blockers usually come as tablets and they are prescribed by doctors to help with conditions relating to the heart, such as angina, heart failure and high blood pressure. They control the heart rate. Whilst beta blockers are not illegal, they are banned in several sports, such as archery, golf and darts, due to their ability to affect performance. The two main effects of this drug on performance are that they slow the heart rate down and block the actions of adrenaline. This leads to them having a calming and relaxing effect on the performer. This reduction in anxiety can benefit a sportsperson such as a golfer. Beta blockers can help to prevent the hands from shaking, and this would be very, very beneficial to a golfer when they are taking an important putt on the green to make par or a birdie. Beta blockers also help darts players and archers to become more accurate when they are feeling under pressure. If you are ever asked to give a sporting example of who would benefit from this drug, then you should state how by blocking adrenaline, beta blockers help a sports person, such as one of the ones named already, to perform with a steady hand and less nerves. The three side effects of this drug include dizziness, sickness, and low blood pressure due to the drug potentially lowering the heart rate to dangerously low levels. Unit 21C, Ethical and Socio-Cultural Issues in Physical Activity and Sport, recording number 6. In this recording, I will discuss our final performance-enhancing drug, stimulants. Stimulants are banned substances such as cocaine, caffeine, amphetamines and ephedrine. Some stimulants, such as caffeine, are not illegal, but athletes who are competing cannot consume too much, as this can be deemed to enhance performance in some sports. The main effects of this drug on performance are that they can increase alertness, reduce tiredness, and increase competitiveness. These make them performance-enhancing across many sports. In sports such as tennis, they can aid the performer by speeding up their reaction time. This will allow the player to react to a serve quickly due to their increased reflexes. This will increase their chances of not only returning the ball, but also being able to choose where to hit it on their opponent's side to make it difficult for them to return. This would also be beneficial in sports such as boxing and baseball. A final performer that may take stimulants is a sprinter. In the 100 metre sprint, 0.1 of a second could be the difference between winning or losing, so a performer may use this drug to ensure that they set off out of the blocks on the beat of the bang of the gun, as said by sprinter Linford Christie. The side effects of this drug include high blood pressure, anxiety and aggression. Injuries can also be made worse as they mask the feelings of tiredness and pain. This means that a performer could push themselves too far and make an injury worse. These drugs are also highly addictive, and it is very difficult to kick the habit once they have taken them. Unit 2.1C, Ethical and Socio-Cultural Issues in Physical Activity and Sport, recording number 7. In this recording, I will discuss the reasons why a performer may take performance-enhancing drugs and the impact of drug use in sport on the performers and the sport itself. There are many reasons why a performer may take performance-enhancing drugs. The first and most obvious is because they want to win. However, whilst this is true and should be said in your answers, we also need to delve further into the motives as to why an athlete would cheat in this manner. The other reasons for using performance-enhancing drugs include: number 1, to win or gain success at any costs. Number 2, they may feel under pressure to win or succeed as a nation. This is particularly the case in events like the Olympics or in World Cup competitions where a performer is representing their country. Number 3, they may feel under pressure from the media and the public to be successful. Number 4, they may want to win in order to be successful and therefore gain more sponsorship deals and therefore money, as their careers are short, so they may feel like they have to make as much money as they can before they retire. Number 5, to improve characteristics such as their speed and strength in order to gain an advantage in sport. Number 6, to reduce the recovery time that it takes to get over an injury. Number 7, they may think that others are already taking drugs, so they want to be able to compete equally, and it is a case of if you can't beat them, join them. Number 8, they may not be good enough to win naturally, so they have to cheat in order to compete. Number 9, they may have no morals and don't see it as wrong what they are doing. And finally, number 10, because they may feel under pressure from coaches or teammates to take them if they are also doing it themselves. The sport that has had the most cases of athletes being caught taking performance-enhancing drugs in recent times is athletics. It is easy to see how many of these reasons relate to an athlete in this individual sport in comparison to others. For athletes, their chance to be on a world stage only comes along every 4 years, and it's not like the majority of other sports where they may compete at the highest level week in, week out. In an event such as the 100-metre sprint, an athlete may only get 3 chances at taking part in the famous 10-second race and winning the gold medal in their lifetime, maybe 4 if they're lucky. Despite this, the athletes train hard, day in, day out, for a chance at holding the title of the world's fastest man or woman. Some sprinters such as Dwayne Chambers, Shelly-Ann Fraser, Justin Gatlin and Tyson Gay have been so desperate to win that they have used performance-enhancing drugs to increase their chances. It is likely that these athletes felt pressure to win from their nation, the media, and took drugs in order to gain success at any cost. Performance-enhancing drugs can negatively affect a performer, as if they are caught using them, they are often stripped of all their titles and achievements, ordered to pay back prize money, and dropped by their sponsors. Their reputation often never recovers after they have been caught cheating. For example, in 2017, Justin Gatlin, who had been previously banned on 2 occasions for taking stimulants and anabolic steroids, came in second place ahead of Usain Bolt. The crowd, who all wanted Bolt to win in his final professional race, booed Gatlin heavily, despite him having tested clear from drugs at the time. However, his reputation had preceded him in this case. The international governing bodies for sports, such as FIFA in football, the ICU in cycling, and World Athletics, work really hard to ensure that there are no drug cheats in their sport. They do this by drug testing athletes randomly throughout the season and after events. If a performer is caught, they hand out hefty fines and bans in an effort to try and deter others from taking drugs. These organisations do not want drug cheats in their sport, as this causes the sport to develop a bad reputation. For example, in the 90s, cycling was full of drugs cheats, including Lance Armstrong, who cheated his way to 7 Tour de France titles. Another reason why the sport do not want drug cheats is because it can lose its credibility. When watching a sport that has a history of drug cheats, it is difficult to believe that the results of the performers are honest without being sceptical as to whether they have used drugs or not. For example, if a brand new 100-metre sprint world record is set, then people would potentially suspect the athlete of having taken performance-enhancing drugs due to what they perceive an unreal achievement and the sport's history